Blog Talk Radio.
Group in New York is going to be different from Celestine in LA.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. Right.
Streeters in New York is going to be different from Art and Commerce in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Art and Commerce in New York is going to be different from, what do you call it, and Beauty in LA. Mm-hmm. All the agencies are different.
Yeah.
And you have to first seek to understand and to be understood.
Mm-hmm.
When you start looking for an agency, it's your job to spend the time to visit the agency's website, see the kinds of artists they have, see the presentations
yes.
of the artists that they are representing, how those artists are presenting themselves,
mm-hmm.
and look at what you have and say, am I in line with this?
Mm-hmm.
Is this the agency I want to be with? Are they actually getting their artists the kind of jobs that I want? And then you put together a hit list
mm-hmm.
of like five agencies.
Mm-hmm.
And then put down the reasons why you're interested. Write down for yourself, this is why I'm interested in this agency. This is why I think I'm a fit. Because the reasons that you think you're a fit are the benefits you have to offer. Guess what? When somebody asks you why you can't tell them you went to a beta. Well, I graduated from and I went to a beta.
Wow.
Then why is your stuff so raggedy if you did all the work?
Mm.
Right? It's about positioning yourself to be attractive to the agency.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding which agencies you want to be with.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding how you believe you add value. And then approaching the agency.
You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. We are making black progress. Stay tuned.
Time to rise and shine with the Hair Radio Morning Show with Gary Hines.
Hair Radio.
Welcome to the Hair Radio Show on
Blog
Talk Radio. The host with the most, Mr. Kerry Hines.
Good morning, and welcome to an all-new live edition of the Hair Radio Morning Show. We're the longest-running daily live broadcast on hair in the world, 25 years and counting. Now, on today's broadcast, we've got the latest in hair and beauty talk, great music, and much, much more. I must thank our Carapi Hair Products, Hair Nation Expo events, Salon TV Network, and all of our amazing advertisers who are responsible for getting this episode on the air. Now, if today is your first time tuning in, thank you. And remember to press 1 to make a live comment or shout-out during the show. We're here each weekday from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 5 to 8 Central. Now grab your cup of coffee and enjoy today's show.
Are you a stylist, barber, nail tech, or involved in personal care on any level? Are you good at what you do? I bet you are. And as being as good as you are, that leaves you less time to handle your clients. I mean, as far as booking appointments, product sales, pricing, and all that. Well, I have something that'll help you on that end and still allow you to be great. ChairWatch. It's a new mobile booking platform that allows your client direct access to you. It'll allow them to book, change, cancel appointments, place themselves on standby, buy products, and even be able to send you direct messages. And that is just a taste of all the services that ChairWatch provides. Sounds good? Then check it out at chairwatch.com, or you can download the app via the Apple Store or Google Play. ChairWatch, a new and better way to connect with your clients.
Did you know that the Hair Radio Show with Terry Hines is the longest-running radio broadcast on hair and beauty talk in the world? It's a broadcasting hair industry institution. Be a live guest on air and join our long list of amazing celebrities and hair and beauty industry luminaries who've all been on our show. Give our office team a call at 833-402-8882. Again, that's 833-402-8882. Or visit us online at hairradio.com. Because you haven't made it until you've made it to Hair Radio.
This is Queen Tree, and I'm shouting out the Hair Radio Show with Terry Hines.
Crystal Jones Bond of Assuage Hair and Body, and I love the Hair Radio Show.
Hello, everybody. I'm Valerie from Validate Your Beauty. I am giving a shout out to the Hair Radio Morning Show, Terry Hines.
How to get rich in the hair business by Terry Hines. When I think about this amazing book, I think back to when I was writing this book back in about 2013, maybe a little earlier. I had met with one of the graphic folks and one of the persons who was helping us to kind of get Hair Radio back on track. And I was focused on doing a live meetup event called The Legends, working with the Legends event back then, honoring the Legends. And so I needed a book to kind of be the linchpin for the live hair event. And so here comes this fella to help me pull it together. His name's Anthony. And I did not do the cover at that time. I was not designing graphics. I had no interest in that at the time. And it was my job to write the book. And I had to pretty much get it done quickly so that it would be available when we launched our live Legends event, honoring the legends of the hair industry in different fields. And so now, scan ahead, the book is celebrating about 10 years of being in release and has been a very critical part of a person, who is just looking to add funds to the bottom line. That's what the book was, the crux of the book, and certainly, how to get rich in the hair business. The title alone makes you aware that if that's what you're looking for, these are the steps that you need to take. And where it leads you to is no other place but to be successful. But again, this is how to get rich in the hair business, and I'm honored to be working on a brand new follow-up book that will help you to take you beyond. So I'm super excited, and in honor of the 10th anniversary of the How to Get Rich in the Hair Business book, we will re-release it. along with a brand new edition. So lots more to come, and just stay tuned.
You're listening to The Hair Radio Morning Show, the number one hair and beauty radio show worldwide, and the longest running hair and beauty radio show.
The shop money is fast money, and if you're wise, you'll stash the money, because eventually you'll get burnt out. Now your pocket's looking funny. Never saw it coming because you've been balling since 24. Doing hand designer shoes all day, now your knees sore. Create your exit plan or you'll be stuck in the trap. Like selling dope, the money come faster with no plan, it's a wrap. Miss your kids growing up trying to stack that paper. Now they're grown and you missed out on their life, and I hope they don't hate you. The shop will make you money, but it can leave you blind. Taking that thing that you can't get back, and that's called time. Taking trips to the hair show, yeah, that's sweet, but then you gotta rush back to the shop to stand on your feet. I'm just trying to school this generation the best that I can. Ball out and stack that paper, make sure you got an exit plan. The hair game is like a trap, money falling in your lap. God forbid you get sick, now your clientele off track. You better get you some insurance, and that's just something you can't dodge, cause you mess around and you get sick, now you're forced to get a job. You buy your kids everything just to compensate for the time lost, traded in the best years of their life just to call myself a boss.
I'm Maggie Anderson. I am the creator of The Empowerment Experiment and the author of Our Black Year, my family's year-long stand completely living off of Black-owned businesses. When we decided to take on this public pledge, we had no idea how hard it would be. There was only one Black-owned grocery store in all of Illinois. And that grocery store closed 5 months before we finished our year. And I have two little girls. There means no fresh milk, no fresh meats, no fresh produce. But I put them through that because we took the stand and we wanted really to do something extreme out of love for our community, to expose how few Black businesses there still are, to refute negative stereotypes about Black-owned businesses, and to expose economic injustice that still persists in America. After the year, I decided that I could not go back to corporate. I could not go back to law. I've made this issue of economic racism and really trying to create economic empowerment in our Black community my life. The Black hair care firms, they sustained the civil rights movement. Black women created these companies, huge, thriving companies, and we needed that. We talk about Black Wall Street now because we shine a light on what happened in Tulsa. Most Black neighborhoods were anchored by these Black Wall Streets. And if we could bring that back, America would be better. I'm not saying bring all of it back. That would probably be impossible. But we can bring Black hair care back. There are great Black hair care companies that exist, Black-owned hair care companies that exist right now. And it would be wonderful for, in America, just like other groups own their culturally relevant products and industries, that the Black community can own the biggest Black hair care brands, that the Black community can own Black beauty supply stores. 3% of the beauty supply stores in Black neighborhoods, and Black people know what I'm talking about. If you go into a Black neighborhood, you're going to see a beauty supply store, and they're going to sell all the Black hair care products that only Black people use, and they are not owned by Black people. So I've issued the Black-owned hair care challenge, just asking everyday folks to say, "Hi, my name is Maggie Anderson, and I accept the Black-owned hair care challenge," and tell the world that from now on, if I'm going to buy Black hair care products, I'm going to make sure it's from a Black-owned company.
We're talking with Mr. Navan Ward, and we'd like to officially welcome you, Navan, to the show. Good morning, officially.
Good morning, and officially, thank you. Thank you, Carrie, for having me.
Absolutely. Now, we've got to just jump on in on this topic. It's one that we have been covering. Well, quite frankly, long before the NIH put out the findings from their study back at the end of last year, we had already been discussing this on and off unofficially for years. This has been something that folks have suspected in the community, in our community, and they have discussed it at the kitchen table, perhaps, but it had never reached to having findings of the report just 100% or conclusively until I read this, what they had put out. So I want to start there a little bit, and what we're talking about is the use of chemical hair straighteners and how it seems to that there's this big link that has that apparently is caused for black women who use these chemical straighteners at a much more alarming rate than other communities. So let's talk about this. Now, Nayvan, how did your law firm get involved with all of this? How did this get on your radar at your firm?
Well, you know, you're right with regards to how they have this issue, hair relaxers, having some type of negative effect on those who use it. Of course, those who use it are predominantly African-American women or women who have Afro backgrounds. You know, if you look at the start of it, look at the various different formations of it throughout the years, going from lye relaxers to all the way to no-lye relaxers, but still the preparation that our women have to go through, making sure they don't scratch their head before perms, how it burns, how there's a cost to straightening their hair, relaxing curls in their hair that they go through many on at least every month, every 2 months, every 3 month time frame throughout a year. It certainly has been a suspicion that type of pain has to have some negative consequences. Didn't know necessarily, at least, coming from a household with a black mother, sister, black wife, black aunt, multiple close friends and loved ones who are African-American females who have to go through that process. Never really thought or could imagine that some chemical could be going in your hair could affect your uterus or your ovaries. But the thought was that the suspicion is that this can't necessarily be okay, so to speak, but it's become a form of life. It's become for many a necessity in order to be able to have the look that they want, or to be able to fit in, to be able to achieve whatever goals they may very well have to achieve. So many of our women push forward and utilize these products over the years, and with that NIH study that you referenced, which showed for the first time with conclusive evidence that there is a very, very strong link to hair relaxer users and uterine cancer. And other studies that have also linked ovarian cancer to the use as well. It definitely was startling, and it's something that all of these beautiful women in my life, as well as the clients that I have the awesome responsibility and appreciation to represent, that's an issue that we're having to cope with and deal with. And for some who are already victims of this, and then some that now have the knowledge that it may very well cause these particular injuries, and how they have to move forward with it is something that that study certainly gives to many both victims and hopefully informing the public as they go forward. In the best way possible to not be victims of this particular product as well. And
great. group in New York is going to be different from Celestine in L.A.,
yes.
Right?
Right.
Streeters in New York is going to be different from Art and Commerce in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Art and Commerce in New York is going to be different from, what do you call it, and Beauty in L.A. All the agencies are different.
Yeah.
And you have to first seek to understand and to be understood.
Mm-hmm.
When you start looking for an agency, it's your job to spend the time to visit the agency's websites, see the kinds of artists they have, see the presentations
yes.
of the artists that they are representing, how those artists are presenting themselves,
mm-hmm.
and look at what you have and say, am I in line with this?
Mm-hmm.
Is this the agency I want to be with? Are they actually getting their artists the kind of jobs that I want? And then you put together a hit list
mm-hmm.
of like five agencies.
Mm-hmm.
And then put down the reasons why you're interested. Write down for yourself, this is why I'm interested in this agency. This is why I think I'm a fit. Because the reasons that you think you're a fit are the benefits you have to offer. Guess what? When somebody asks you, why you, you can't tell them you went to a beta. Well, I graduated from and I went to a beta.
Wow.
Then why is your stuff so raggedy if you did all the work? Right? It's about positioning yourself to be attractive to the agency,
mm-hmm.
understanding which agencies you want to be with,
mm-hmm.
understanding how you believe you add value, and then approaching the agency.
Donna Jackson, I'm coming. Stop.
I can live it for the moment.
Go.
Celebrate the feeling. I go up, you can live it for the moment. I don't stop, I celebrate the feeling. I go up,
work on it.
I'm ready for now. Not
You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. Now, my very next guest comes to us from Australia. Her name is Catherine Rondebel. We're going to have her tell you the rest. Good morning, Catherine. Welcome to the Hair Radio Morning Show.
Good morning, Carrie, and I hope everything is very well with yourself.
It is going great. Well, first of all, it's morning here in New York as we talk live on the air, but where you are, it's actually nighttime. Mm-hmm. So there's quite a bit of difference. So tell us the time difference so we can kind of get the understanding. Is it like the same day as America in the Northeast, or the next day or the next night? How does that work all the way in Australia?
Well, it is 12 hours after you, so it's 9:30 p.m. here.
Okay, got it. 12 hours after us. Wow. Okay, wow, very interesting. Okay, well, with that in mind, we're going to move on. We got so much to talk about. First of all, Catherine, technically I should welcome you back to the Hair Radio Morning Show. You have been with us many times in the past, and one of the major reasons, I should say, is because of what you have done and who you are. As the creator of Headbed, you've done just an enormous contribution to the hair and beauty industry. So first of all, let's have you tell everybody officially what Headbed is.
Well, thank you, Gary. My clients who used to come to see me with neck pain, shoulder pain, headaches after having been to a hair salon, it got me thinking about the position of a person's head and neck when they are at the shampoo basin. And research from the medical literature shows, and I was not surprised to find, that there's medical evidence of neck injury and even, in a worst-case scenario, strokes. Mm. So I designed the headbed to have a support placed under the head of the person, and therefore it takes all the weight off the head, and the neck, therefore, can relax. There's a lot less pressure on the neck and its delicate blood vessels and nerves when the head is properly supported at the basin. The neck can take up to 40 pounds of pressure on the vertebrae if the head is reclined backwards and not supported at the shampoo basin. So this is what really motivated me nearly 7 years ago now to design and research and make a headbed.
Well, I'm just blown away because, first of all, for our listeners out there, the folks who are in and around the hair and beauty industry, this may be the very first time they're really ever hearing of a syndrome such as this. Can you talk to us a little bit about this and how it's, this has kind of come to light? I mean, you really have been sharing this for quite a bit of time. So kind of bring everybody up to speed on what this beauty parlor syndrome, stroke syndrome, is all about.
Yes, well, it was actually published by a New York doctor, a neurologist, who started looking at a pattern of injury and strokes that happened particularly to women, middle-aged women in particular, as they'd come back from hair salon. So whether the same day or a few days later, they developed symptoms of slurred speech or pain down the arm or headaches, and then eventually ended up with strokes. And these would be ladies in their 40s and 50s. So he published an article in a very prestigious medical journal to say, look, there is a very definite problem there. So beauty parlor stroke syndrome, as it's called, or salon sink radiculopathy, which is a very fancy name to say that pain travels down the nerve branches of the neck from too much pressure on the neck. And that all happens because a human head weighs anything between 4 to 5 kilos, which is about 8 to 10 pounds.
I'm so glad you did that you gave us the, what did you call it, the exchange.
Yes, I think in the US you're more into pounds, isn't it?
Right, exactly. I'm like, please say pounds. Wow. Well, I tell you, this is just something that literally unnerves folks, because when they go to, especially our fans out there, they go to the hair salons, They're not expecting this. Should this be part of the consultation, in your opinion, of the professionals to share with their clients, their prospective clients, when they come in the door?
Oh, absolutely. Finding out if a person already has some pain or some injury or some musculoskeletal problems is very important when they are about to sit at the basin and place their head backwards. And you have two types of basins. In America, I've noticed that there is a fixed to the plumbing and the cabinetry type of basin, and there is the other one, which is called a backwash, which the basin tilts down to a person's shoulders. But in both cases, if the person's head is not supported, then all the pressure goes onto the neck vertebrae. So it's very important. And hairdressers are very caring people. They always try and make their client comfortable. And I know some hairdressers have injured their wrist because they're trying to support, to hold the weight of the head of the client whilst they're doing the shampoo with one hand. So definitely ask about it. Ask the client, have they already got any pre-existing issues with their neck? But often it's not known because it all happens on the inside, on the little blood vessels that travel through the neck vertebrae. And who, you wouldn't know as a hairdresser if somebody has a potential for strokes or, you know, has high blood pressure or could have some plaque build up in their blood vessels. So
and
it's very tricky. So the easy...
Yes.
Yep.
No, I was just going to say that exactly.
Mm-hmm.
They would take the proper precaution, and usually that's see a doctor, you know, after that point. But I'll tell
that's
you,
right.
Catherine, this is just amazing. Now, it's quite, you know, a lot going on these days, and I do want to turn to that. But I do want to talk a little bit more about this amazing device. We're talking about Headbet today. And my very special guest on the Hair Radio Morning Show, all the way from Australia, is Miss Catherine Rondebell, who we just appreciate and adore here on our show. She's been a friend and family member here to the Hair Radio Show, folks, for many years. Catherine, so I want to definitely talk about this. Now, you mentioned the basin, and we call them sinks here as well for you guys out there listening. Right, so
shampoo
now,
bowl.
The shampoo bowl, there you go, exactly. And we're talking about, I want to paint a picture, so we're talking about that curvature where it kind of allows for the neck to fit in that little groove on those sinks that
groove.
You see at the salons.
Correct.
And barbershops.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much. And so you have the device that kind of, literally, it's so easy, and I do mean it's easy to just pretty much lay right on there, but it has
exactly.
a huge, right? It has a very, so this is not something that is difficult to affix to the sink. Can you just describe that process again?
Sure. You can retrofit the headbed to 99% of sinks. So we have a special model, which is for the American style of shampoo bowl, the one that is fixed to the cabinetry or the plumbing in the wall, and then we have the one for the backwash, which is more of a ceramic bowl that tilts down to the client's shoulders. So you simply clip, it's a silicone, very soft, flexible cushion that molds itself into the curve of the neck area, but it has this little platform that goes out inside the basin and which sits just under the head, the occipital bone of the client's head as the head reclines backwards. So it's like putting your head on a little pillow. That's why we call it the head bed.
I love it.
Therefore, that's right. So it can fit on any basin, and the European model has three adapter wedges, which then allows the head platform to be raised or lowered depending on the angle of the client's neck and head. So it's really been thought about on many ways to cover all potential and possibilities of different styles of basins.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, we just love it. It's the head bed. So I am just blown away. What is the best website, or how can folks get this amazing head bed device?
Yes, well, we're very lucky to have a lovely agent, Lynn, in Florida.
Yes,
and our
awesome.
Website there is, and our website is headbedusa.com. So www.headbedusa, one word, .com.
Awesome.
And also, Kerry, you probably would have it on your...
You beat me to it, Catherine Rondebel. Yes, we're going to be so excited to offer this, as we have throughout the years, right here at Hair Radio. You can simply go to the Salon TV Network app into our store on the app. Now, you can download the app for free. It's in the Google Play Store worldwide. And purchase that wonderful headbed device there, or just contact Hair Radio at any time, and we'll be certainly able to put you in touch with Lynn and some of the folks at Headbed and all that wonderful good stuff. So really, really make it really nice. And it's not something, I do want to talk about this, just, you know, of course you have to contact them for pricing and all that, but the one thing I do want to say is that it is incredibly affordable for what you are, what this, the prevention, when you look at it. First of all, it's affordable, period. Let me just get that on out. And then I also want to say what it can prevent is priceless. So there is just, I really don't know any other words to put that, Catherine. Any other way to say it?
We call it priceless because, you know,
exactly.
You're protecting your health and...
Yeah.
There is nothing more important in life than your health and your client's health. And it's a safety device. And for a professional tool of the trade, it comes down to about $19 per year because we know the headbed will last you more than 5 years. Our salons in Australia, the first one, bought the headbed 6.5 years ago, and they're still using it.
Oh,
so,
that is just amazing. Now, Catherine, actually, you lead me exactly where I wanted to go with you at this moment. And that is to talk about some of the things that are going on. But first, just kind of paint the picture again. I want to welcome Catherine Rondebel to welcome back to the Hair Radio Morning Show. She is on the line with us all the way from Australia. Now, Catherine, what part of Australia are you in again?
Right, on the west coast of Australia. And we are known as the most isolated city in the world. Gary, Perth.
Why?
It's got the ocean, Indian Ocean on one side, and it's got the Great Australian Desert on the other side before you reach the east coast of Australia.
Wow. Well, my goodness. And you've been here to America. I've seen you here in the New Jersey, New York area before, so I know you come to America. You travel everywhere, though. You really do, Catherine.
Well,
remember you.
Well, with the invention of the headbed being such a unique and new tool of your trade, I had the great opportunity to travel to the main hair expos around the world, the Paris one, the London Hair Expo, to New York at the wonderful Javits Center.
Yes.
So
IBS
was just magnificent, and meeting you there was really
absolutely
wonderful.
Yes, we had
and
great
having
time.
The being able to present this new and unique safety device for the shampoo bowl to all the hairdressers that are top of their trade and see how fascinated they were and you know, really wanting to get one for their salons and their clients. It was just wonderful. I'm so blessed to have had so many beautiful meetings, including yourself.
Thank you, and likewise, absolutely. Now, how does it play with all of this going on? We haven't broached the subject. It's always the elephant in the room, and that is this COVID situation currently that's happening around the world. Let me ask you, have the folks been affected in Australia, and how so?
Well, during sort of March, April, May, when it was really the start of sort of worldwide awareness, we went into lockdown here too, so many salons had to close, and that was very scary for a lot of small businesses and salon owners. But by June, we were able to reopen because the number of COVID cases was under control in Australia. So this is when the sale of our headbed just absolutely tripled and quadrupled because...
Did you know that the Hair Radio Show with Terry Hines is the longest-running radio broadcast on hair and beauty talk in the world? It's a broadcasting hair industry institution. Be a live guest on air and join our long list of amazing celebrities and hair and beauty industry luminaries who've all been on our show. Give our office team a call at 833-402-8882. Again, that's 833-402-8882. Or visit us online at hairradio.com. Because you haven't made it until you've made it to Hair Radio.
You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines, and we have a very special guest with us today. Her name is Dr. Praneet James. And Dr. James, welcome to the Hair Radio Morning Show.
Well, thank you, Carrie, for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure. Now, you are a trichologist. Why don't you start, tell our listeners out there, what exactly is a trichologist?
Well, Carrie, that's a great question. Trichologist is someone who has studied the science of hair. So I work very closely with clients that are suffering from various hair and scalp disorders, hair loss, or just in general trying to get the hair to a healthy state.
Okay. Well, we're gonna really go in that, kind of talk about that a little bit more in just a few minutes. We have a lot of folks out there who are experiencing what appears to be like hair loss or experiencing mm-hmm. hair loss. We might as well just say it. And I think that we'll be able to kind of shed some light on some things and kind of be able to point them in the right direction in terms of
Absolutely.
Seeking treatment or seeking help. Now, listen, in full disclosure, Dr. James, I have to say to all of the fans of the Hair Radio Show and those who've already purchased How to Get Rich in the Hair Business book, you are featured in this great book, so by yours truly. So I want to thank you for that and just point it out to everybody that in addition to this wonderful opportunity we have to talk to you today, that they can always pick up the How to Get Rich in the Hair Business book because you bring the hair talk and they can read it word for word in this book. So I just want to mention that, get that out of the way a bit. Now, Dr. James, you were just telling us in terms of what trichology is. Let's just go back a little bit. Tell the folks where you're from and where you operate from.
I am originally from Norfolk, Virginia. I currently stay about 30 minutes away from Norfolk in the beautiful city of Virginia Beach, Virginia, where I also operate my salon, natural hair salon and clinic, which is known as Fruit of the Spirit Hair Care Studio and Clinic.
All right. Well, we're going to be checking back with you on that throughout the broadcast. I'm going to remind all the folks out there, keep reminding everybody about this wonderful place that you have so when they're in the area, they can check it out. Now, let us delve into this wonderful world of trichology. You see a lot of folks who have, in their opinion, experienced hair loss. But let's flip it. What do you think, what is the most common type of issue that you treat there in your shop in the way of hair loss?
That's a great question, Carrie. There are so many different variations of different conditions that I treat. For the most part, I find that a lot of women are coming into the clinic with traction alopecia. Traction alopecia is just one of the different variations of alopecia. There are so many. But what traction alopecia is when the client has or the actual stylist who rendered the service has caused trauma to the hair follicle. And in some instances, it can be reversed if it's caught, you know, early enough or, they're seeing the early signs. However, if they wait too long, then the follicles can become dormant, whereas, you know, it's not reversible. So that is the main... that's the number one. And then, you know, I'm seeing androgenetic alopecia, where it's, you know, it's from the genetics. It's, in, you know, hereditary. And then I'm seeing a lot of seborrheic dermatitis, wherein that can also lead, you know, to hair loss or thinning around the hairline if it's not treated. So again, there's so many different variations, but pretty much those are the number one types that I'm seeing.
Okay, well, in talking about it a bit, especially the traction alopecia, is that the one that's identified most with, like, the tight braids and the pulling from the scalp for the tight ponytail type things? Tell us a little bit, what are some of the, that in your experience, some of the common styles that seem to contribute to traction alopecia or could lead to it?
The type of styling that could lead to traction alopecia, of course, is the weaving, the tight braids, chemical damage, you know, overprocessing of chemical relaxers, which can also cause scarring alopecia, wherein, you know, in most instances, the hair will not grow back. But for the most part, it's the tight braids, glue, which is definitely a no-no. I wouldn't advise anyone to do the glue-ins, even with the so-called protective methods or taking precautionary measures, you still can cause, you know, damage to the follicle itself. So those are pretty much the contributing factors.
Okay. Now, I've heard a lot of folks say that they feel like it, that there's nothing they can do. You know, and I'm understanding that there are some treatments. You yourself just mentioned that if, in some cases, if it's caught early, it can possibly be reversed. What can someone do? What are the steps they should take in terms of first identifying this and then what possibly could they do to minimize this or to reverse this, if you will?
They need to see a trichologist right away when they're experiencing the early signs. Like, say, for instance, they're experiencing excessive hair breakage or they had a chemical service rendered and they, you know, a bald spot occurs, or they're undergoing a tremendous amount of stress, which is also which can also lead to alopecia areata, which I didn't tap or touch on.
Right.
Alopecia areata can be caused by traumatic or chronic stress. Traumatic, of course, is something that happens unexpected, death in the family, loss of job, et cetera. That can contribute to traumatic stress, which, of course, can cause alopecia areata, wherein they may experience one mosaic circular spot in the head. If it goes untreated, then, of course, it spreads, you know, over the head, and it can go into alopecia totalis, where they lose all of the hair and eyebrows, et cetera. And then if it goes untreated, then it can actually go into alopecia universalis, wherein they lose all body hair. Of course, that is an autoimmune type issue,
right.
which, of course, can be targeted with health as well.
Now, the areata, isn't that the one that can possibly, you know, your hair can start to grow back after, you know, maybe the stress is, you know, alleviated in some way? Is that possible?
Absolutely. Yes. It normally takes about 3 to 6 months. You know, if the hair is going to grow back, that's the norm, anywhere between 3 to 6 months with treatment. But that is also a major. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I'm listening to you. Go right ahead.
No, I was just saying that is definitely another major issue that comes into the clinic, the alopecia areata.
Wow. Now, in your clinic, do you treat majority women or men, or is it about even? Do you find that these types of issues are about even?
I would say men are about 20 years ahead in the hair loss industry, whether, you know, they're receiving hair replacement treatments, et cetera. But a lot of women are coming out more so now than ever before. But to answer your question, Carrie, I treat approximately about 70% women and 30% men or males.
But tell us a little bit
males are very secretive.
Mm-hmm.
Males are very secretive. You know, they're not like us women wherein we, you know, we like to talk about it in a group, et cetera. They, you know, the males, they like to be very, this is a very private issue for them, and they don't really have a support group like the women, you know, do. But for the most part, like I said, I do treat both.
Okay, because I kind of can understand what you mean, because if I could just get away, throw a wig on, and nobody would know it's a wig, I'm out the door, I'm stepping on, and that's kind of how I, you know. So in terms of treatment, yeah, and you know, being a guy, I guess, you know, that's very possible where we would look at it differently. But I do want to ask about that. You said that, you know, with the men were 20 years ahead. What exactly did you mean by that? I'm not sure if I was clear on that.
Well, with the males, you know, with the hair replacement, like Hair Club for men and women, you know, et cetera, they actually, you know, took part in the hair replacement units prior to the women. They do like the toupees and the, you know, the hair.
Right.
Of course, they've got a little bit more modern today, but they were actually the ones that started, you know, wearing the hair replacement units or pieces, which is something also that I offer to as a solution to take care of my patients or clients that are suffering from hair loss, to take care of their appearance while they're in the midst of treatment.
Okay. Do they still call it like the prosthesis items and all
prosthesis.
Of that?
Yes. Yes, cranial prosthesis or prosthetics, yes.
Okay, wow. This is a vast subject. First of all, folks, if you've just joined us, you're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines, and today's guest is renowned trichologist, Dr. Praneet James. And I'm so excited to have her with us. And you've been a longtime supporter of the Hair Radio Show, as we pointed out earlier. And we're just very excited to have you with us. And you are the go-to person. You are the go-to trichologist. And just a wonderful stylist. Now, you're a natural hair stylist. So you do, so you run the whole gamut. Tell our listeners some of the other things that you do at your salon, some of the other services, I should say.
Sure. As I mentioned earlier, of course, I am the trichologist, but also I am the, I'm an all natural focused stylist, meaning that we do not render chemicals within the salon, with the exception of color, but as for relaxers or permanent waving, et cetera, we do not render those type of services. However, whether the client is wanting to wear the hair kinky, coily, or smooth, frizz-free, flowing hair, we are able to achieve those options with chemical-free solutions. So we do provide alternatives to our clients to, of course, maintain the optimal health of the hair.
Okay, and speaking of optimal health of the hair, do you find that a lot of the clients nowadays are coming in with their whole attitude is about what can they do to keep their hair healthy or to get their hair healthy, and then what steps they need to do to keep their hair healthy? And maybe seeing you as that great first step, but what have you noticed at the salon?
Absolutely. A lot of the consumers are coming in, especially naturalists. They're coming in. They're wanting to know what products they can use on their hair, what supplements they can take to maintain healthy hair, et cetera. My approach is a multi-therapy approach. I work inside out. So healthy hair starts within, and it works its way out. So a lot of times clients that are coming in have a lot of nutritional deficiencies, which, of course, reflect in the hair. So let's say, for instance, someone comes in, they have an issue in their, you know, of course, our body, we have 10 different body systems. So a lot of times the women that are coming in, their issues are with their glandular system. That's the system that houses our adrenal glands. That's the system that helps us to deal with stress, menopausal issues, thyroid issues. All of that stems from that particular body system. So, again, back to health, a lot of times it's just a matter of being placed on a customized regimen in order to, you know, achieve the optimum health of the hair. Then, of course, the products, using the correct products in the hair. A lot of times they're using this product, they're using that, and they're actually product junkies. At my salon, I require, before any services are rendered, I do require a consultation to be rendered. It's not a 10-minute or a 5-minute consultation. It's actually 45 minutes to an hour where I meet one-on-one with the potential consumer that comes in. I meet with them one-on-one. We address the goals that they desire for their hair. And this is just a more so a basic consultation targeting healthy hair and natural hair. So we discuss their goals that they desire for their hair. Then I conduct a basic hair and scalp analysis to determine how those goals will be achieved. Then I identify their curl type, which is very important in determining what products will work best on their hair to enhance their curl pattern. So, again, they're not becoming a product junkie or, of course, we can better suit their needs. Then we address the various styling options only based upon the condition of their hair, the looks they're opting for, and I also go over an at-home maintenance regimen to follow. So a lot of times, you know, whether the client wants to be salon-dependent or they want to take care of their hair at home, my right. number one goal is to make sure that they understand how to maintain the health of the hair. So if I have someone come, you know, a naturalista that comes in where they just want to know what type of products to use in their hair, I don't just sell them the products. I make sure that we do a tutorial. They know step one, step two, step three. I write them out a customized prescription on how to use the products. A lot of times, you know, you have to mix parts, et cetera, and the regimen is specifically designed for the individual. There is no one particular treatment or product that's going to work 100% across the board for each client. So that's why I recommend the consultation. So therefore, everybody's on the same page and we're moving in, you know, in the right direction.
What you say about the products, I mean, that just seems to be key. When we look at television, we are, you know, constantly seeing so many different new items on the market to treat hair loss. What's your take on it? And why do we see so much and nothing seems to really be effective in terms of what we see on TV?
Of course, you know, every time you turn around, like you said, you're seeing this product come out, this product, et cetera. Again, back to knowing exactly what the issues are, we're pretty much determine what is needed for that particular individual. Like I said, there's no one-size-fit-all.
No, there isn't.
I highly recommend, you know, them coming in if they're not in my area, if they're having hair loss issues, et cetera, they need to seek a trichologist. So therefore, they know exactly what the issue is versus treating the symptom.
Thank you, Purple Barbie. It is Wednesday morning. It's December 6th of 2023. I'm Carrie Hines. This is our broadcast show number 929. Show number 929 for those of you who are keeping track. It's mid-show, our second hour. But quite a few things you were listening to there. That was just Dr. Pernique James. And before that, we had on Catherine Rondeau. from Australia. Let me just go ahead and get on our mid-show collaborator here. We're talking about Nicole Marie out of Water Valley, Mississippi. I see. Nicole Marie, are you there? Okay.
We are rocking and rolling. Good morning and happy mid-show.
Yeah, back at you. I was just thinking it would be a great idea, you know, while the show's on, I literally am listening to the broadcast and running out, grabbing some breakfast, literally, while we're all on the air, just to plug it away. And I was just, you know, I look at folks and I just see so much going on up here. And I wonder, what's wrong with society? Do we have so many things going on? I don't know. I go in the, you know, I'm not going to name which morning restaurant, but they sell donuts.
Okay.
That's all I'm going to say on that. But I go in there. Right. Well, I figured it would. And I go in there and just to grab a quick break, I've got to get back. We got to get on air and for mid-show. And I normally go in there. It's one not far from the studio here. And so I go in there, and the normal lady I deal with, she wasn't there. She's usually there on weekends. I don't usually go during the week very often because we're on the air at this time. So I go in there, and I've seen this fella, and I say, oh, boy, when he's there, I don't like how he does things and stuff and just his whole energy and what he's doing is bad. And I guess I need to complain. But it cracked me because he's wearing gloves. Now, I said, well, did anybody ever tell you that you're wearing gloves, but your gloves are not doing any good? Because what you're doing, your gloves are protecting your hands, if you want to look at it that way. But
right.
As far as your customers, you're still transferring. He's opening up the doors and pushing the thing and going in the back and with the same gloves and stuff. And then coming back and making my
sandwich.
Well, the
gloves are contaminated.
Just ignorant, you know, just. So I said, I will definitely let them know that. And just you know, I don't understand where these people, how it's just nobody's paying attention to things. You know, it's just either we've gotten so busy as a society.
Everybody's
or we
in a
just
hurry.
Don't care. Everybody's
I think it's
in
a combination
hurry.
Of both.
It's a combination of both, and I heard this lady yesterday on the news say, I forget what the story was about, but she was like, well, since, they were like, well, when did all this bad stuff start happening? She's like, well, since social media, they have just, you know, and I really have to say, all this technology, all these strides, is it really worth what's happening? Is it got mental illness on an all-time high? You've got folks who just are not coping. You've got all kinds of bad actors out here, and all for the newest iPhone? You know, there's something not right that's inherently not right with all this crazy stuff. And is it too late? Is the genie out of the bottle? Is it too late to get the genie back in? Is it possible? So I don't know. And honestly, is it worth it to just be able to have some conveniences but have society going down the tubes? Honestly, I don't know. But I'll tell you something. If it were up to me, I take social media and push it right off a cliff. I would. I'd rather go back to having to walk to do things or do it the long way. I really
well,
would.
One,
because
one thing
I
feel
the
that social media
calls
people not to not think. oh, I can look something up real quick. So you're not actually processing and thinking about the things that you're doing, the things that you're looking up, because, I mean, it's so fast and so quick and easy. That's what I call it, the microwave society. Everything's quick, fast,
right,
in a hurry, got to get here, got to do this, got to do that. And it's just breaking down, just to me, just the fabric of everything that we used to be.
Exactly, that we used to be. So who are we now as a society collectively? And as you said, you referred to it as a microwave society. I kind of look at it like we need to be the old-fashioned convention oven. Forget the microwave. We need the old-fashioned convention oven that used to
right.
take hours.
Everybody needs to slow down. Stop and
think. They need to slow down,
yeah,
but they also I don't know if we can at this point. I see that everybody's tied to, they've created an environment where we are connected to a device.
True. Like we can't live without the
and
device.
You can't live without, well, psychologically, that's what starts to happen. Remember in psychology, you know, a little baby, and they go through those stages,
right,
and you know, everything is about the hand, the mouth, and this kind of stuff. And so they created this whole environment. And then here we are, stuck in the middle of it. And, you know, young people whose brains are not quite developed as fully, and certainly not to a level of social maturity. And here you're putting this incredible information and just thrashing it towards everybody, nonstop.
Right.
You don't even have time to catch up for yourself, just nonstop.
Right. And so many young people, they don't know life without it. So.
Right, exactly. That's right. Mm. I don't know. It's really cuckoo. So anyway, how's the weather down here today, Nicole Marie, in Water Valley?
Oh, a little chilly this morning. Right now it's about 34 degrees. So it's a little chilly this morning, but it's supposed to warm up some. So how's the weather there in New York?
Actually, I think it's exactly the same thing here, or 36, wow, in Brooklyn.
Okay.
Wow. But it's going to get a little chillier. I think that's the difference, being in Mississippi. Yeah. It's going to start to get a little chillier this week. And winter is kind of arriving, but I think we're doing okay. We've made it all the way to December.
Right.
And,
okay.
You know,
right. During the day, our highs are like in the 50s. A couple of days have been in the 60s. So we're doing okay. That's about average for us.
Well, listen, I know Michael's going to be with us in about 15 minutes, a little less than 15 minutes, about 7:25 or so. Real excited to catch up with him as well. Got some other updates. Wayne Smith is with us in the next hour.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to go back. Nicole, I got to look at this because I don't know. With George Santos, this was really a big story.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
It's huge.
Very big.
And they're still talking.
And what I say is, it's about time.
I totally agree. I don't know. I think that this whole thing with the society, and I don't know why they insist on normalizing the behavior of these people.
Right.
Who absolutely
mean. There's some others that come on out of there, too. Just need a clean house.
They need
start
a clean house. We need a reset button.
Yes.
We need a reset button. This is just ridiculous.
But really, what
you know,
we have though here is a reflection of our society. That's what we have.
Well, this is true. Well, listen, it's really maybe not as complicated when we look back. Honestly, in my opinion, Nicole Marie, it's about accountability. And if you don't hold the persons in your society accountable for their behaviors. You don't have a society of accountability. And that's what really not just contributes, but is the catalyst for feelings of insecurity, for feelings of hopelessness, to me, is the beginning of this whole thing. When the media just reports on all of this about people being this and that, well, listen, if you don't feel like you're included in whatever is the prosperity that others are just thriving in, and they're just marching on like there's no, you know, not looking at their neighbors and things that we, you know, not realizing that humanity and democracy are just, you know, hanging in the balance here.
Right.
And so I hope that we can figure things out. I really do, and we're going to do our part here. I'm going to see if I can get on some folks to really help us to make a difference, as we have been doing our best here each day. We've been on the air. I was thinking back. I said, you know, I've got to get some of the classic pieces on. One of which I wanted to get on today was the one, and if not, we'll do it likely tomorrow. So, but the one with Dr. Yolanda Ragland, who was our foot doctor, and she just hits on so many things. And I was listening back. Yeah, she was on with us in 2022, almost 2 years ago. And January of 2022, that's what I said, almost 2 years ago. People are like, oh, the what? No, so she was with us a long time ago. And I said, you know, I listened to her. I said, this is information that we need to replay to get folks back in so that they can hear a lot of amazing tidbits, not just Dr. Ragland, but also another doctor, Dr. Obang from out in Beverly Hills, who was the Gorilla Glue Girl doctor. These are people and listening. And my desire is to get back some of these folks to see where are they now. That's
great.
What I'd like to do. I'd like to see where are they now, including the gentleman who had, you know, Mary Wilson's from the Supreme Assistant. So
right.
Some of these folks that you've got to know on our show, what are they doing these days? And so we're gonna do our series to bring them back.
Great.
So,
I look forward to that.
Yeah. Yeah, me too, because it'll be so much fun to catch up with some of these folks. So all of that. So listen, what else is going on in the world here at Hair Radio? You know, just kind of focusing on some of the things that we're doing, and I just got to say some interesting stuff. I remember being on the internet, and I'm looking at the you know, I look and I see someone with kind of like a magazine promotion, and I looked and I said, oh my gosh, this is exactly our style. For what our Afrolock magazine is all about and all that kind of stuff. And I said, oh, boy, you know, what can I say? I'm glad that we influence. But, see, I can look and see. I know exactly what our style is. And I see that
right.
That folks who, and I know that you are part of whatever you do. I know who you are. And I just look and I say, wow. I wish that folks could express a little bit more originality. I'm always here. Like, I saw something that said, you know, take a moment and let folks know that that you've inspired them. Stop
right.
copying them and then coming out as a competition. Like, what on earth? Oof. I'm sorry. What in the world?
Wow.
Nicole Marie, I said, what in the world? We got to get
that's
there,
something.
Folks. Goodness. Yeah.
Wow.
But so, you know, I'll say that we're working on it. I'll say that we're working on it. What
okay.
do you say, Nicole Marie? Or we should
okay.
work on it.
Okay. Yeah, we definitely should work on it. Let's say that and say it. We definitely should. Emphasize should.
Yeah, this is true. So now how did your meetings go?
Wow, wow. I don't know, Carrie. Whew, all about creativity.
This is true. Now, did you guys have your community meeting yet?
We did. We had our community meeting. Very interesting meeting for our last standing board meeting for the year. We actually are getting ready for a special election going into 2024, Carrie. Our current mayor, last night was actually his last meeting because during the general election, he actually ran for the chancery clerk position and won. So we are now going to have a special election to vote in our new mayor that will be coming in. So very interesting. Kind of a bitter time. So, yeah, very interesting times coming up in 2024 for us.
Can you keep us informed here at Hair Radio and let us know what's happening in Water Valley, Mississippi?
I certainly will.
Yeah. And this is kind of what we'll be talking about, especially a lot of local politics. Dwayne Smith, former mayor in Irvington, New Jersey, for about, I don't know, maybe 12 years or so. Irvington, New Jersey is right outside of New York City. So he's going to be with us live coming up in about a little over about 40 minutes or so.
Great.
Looking forward to catching up with Wayne again. Yeah. So speaking of inspiration and that little daily burst of hope. So I know, you know, it can sound a little pessimistic sometimes because you get all caught up in all of this. And we have to kind of remember to always be a positive mind. And I'm just grateful that we're on the air today and able to do a live show and just bring everybody along for the ride. So, Nicole Marie, as always, you are always at the top of our list. For that, I don't know, that daily intro burst of hope and all of that good stuff. And we need it badly these days, I'd like to say.
We certainly do.
Yes, and the world kind of needs to hear what you do every day on the show with Hope of the Day. So listen, I'm going to get your new theme underway, and let's get started.
All right.
Well, first of all, hope is important to each and every one of us because it gives our lives meaning. It's that belief that our future can be better than our past. So no matter what we may have been through, going through, going to go through, there's always hope. Just that positive expectation that change can and will occur in all of our lives. So every day, I share an inspirational way from a book by Patrick Lindsay, and it's called High Hope.
All right, Nicole Marie. So what do you have on tap for us today?
Well, Carrie, the hope of the day is daydream. It helps you to break out of your bubble. It allows you to explore possibilities untrammeled by current problems. It encourages you to time travel, to enter others' minds, and to look into the distance. To you, Carrie.
Wow. Thank you, Nicole Marie. I've never in a million years ever would have thought there would have been, encouragement to daydream. I'm just blown away by that. I really am. You caught me off guard today with that. I think it's awesome. I really do because, you know, my whole life, I've been a daydreamer. I've been a daydreamer, a night dreamer, a evening dreamer, a morning dreamer. I'm a dreamer.
It's all around.
I'm one of those individuals. Yeah. I like vision and just thinking and always looking to be the best version of myself. So
awesome.
To me, that lends itself to being a daydreamer. And I do. I've always thought it was good, but folks normally tell you it's bad. So I am so happy to hear that today from the High Hopes book and Patrick Lindsay's book, because I support it. I really do. And like you said, it helps to break out, right?
Right.
Yeah, so I think it's awesome. And time travel gets no better than that. You know, it really doesn't.
So true.
And you can. You can travel in your mind just about anywhere. I'd like to travel right back to before we created this technology. Let's go back there, folks. No, I'm just kidding. So listen, I love it. What about you, Nicole Marie? How do you feel about this Hope of the Day and daydream? Are you a person of daydreams? Do you ever daydream?
Yes, I definitely do. And I actually link daydreaming, like when Patrick Lindsay is talking about it encourages you time to travel, to enter the other's mind and so forth. I link that to reading because you escape.
Yeah.
You get out of your daily norm, routine, things that are going on, and you're able to get into others' minds or go other places. So this is very important, and I definitely encourage it.
Well, we're going to check in with Michael Hopkins, who is the host of the Vet Talk radio show that airs on Tuesday mornings at 8:30 right here on our very broadcast. I'm curious. I think Michael can relate to the time travel part, because I think I've heard him talk about this in the past.
Right.
Well, let's see if we can get a hold of Hopkins. Michael Hopkins, are
good
you
morning,
there?
Michael.
Oh, I am here, and good morning.
Wow. Yes. Happy to show. Michael Hopkins.
Oh, yeah.
So you heard Nicole Marie talk about daydreams and daydreaming and Patrick Lindsay's book. How do you feel about time travel? Are you a time traveler of sorts, Michael?
Wow, time traveler. That's a good one. Well, yeah, you have to. You have to. You have to go and look at the future. What's going to happen? And then you got to go back and reflect in the past. I do that all the time. I think it made me a better parent when it comes to my kids. Because
really?
I can see I can see the future of whatever it is they're doing. And I can see the future. And I can see, okay, well, I know this isn't going to work that way. Been there, seen it, done it. I've got a couple of T-shirts for it. But I'm going to let you figure it out. And then at the right moment, I'm going to have everything in place right there so that you can keep doing what you need to do to get where you need to get to. And one thing about with my kids, I never tell them, see, I told you so. I never do that. I just put everything in place so that they can function. When they need to go do something, like go to work, for instance, I go buy
yes,
a
but
car.
Michael, all of this is, all of this emanates out of the day. Boy, you are good with the daydreaming.
You very much so. Carrie, Nicole
Listen.
Marie, I got four kids. You know, I got four kids, 9 grandchildren, and 3 great grandchildren.
Yeah.
If I'm not a dreamer, what is?
Well,
listen, dream.
Like I just said, Michael took us all for a daydream.
Yes, Michael,
I love your words. The family and you tie to that. Awesome. Well, listen, we've got a big show ahead with so much to get to. Mike, I don't know if you heard, but Wayne Smith is here. Mitch,
love it.
Between 8 and 9 Eastern, 7 and 8 Central. Awesome job today, guys. As always, lots more on the way. We'll take a little bit of a music break. We'll be back with more. And, Michael, we're going to talk about that stuff. We haven't really had a chance to catch up about it, but I do want to talk about it today. So kind of stay with us, folks. We're going way back here. We're going, yes, as we always do. But this is one of my favorite songs. It's a wonderful Clarence Carter song and Jackson Browne. So stay with us.
On the line. He's a new barber, pretty much at the beginning of his career. His name is Darren Scott. Now, he's out in Indianapolis, the Indianapolis area, I should say. It is my honor to welcome Mr. Darren Scott to the Hair Radio Morning Show. Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing just great, Darren. I want to kind of jump right on in. I want to tell the folks a little bit more. Now, are you in Indianapolis, Indiana, or are you in, like, one of the suburbs or something like that?
No, I am located in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Okay. All right. And I should say for the folks out there, you know, we have a lot of listeners out there who are in the Indy area. We broadcast out of Brooklyn, New York, so that's where I'm just kind of becoming more familiar with that. All right. So let's just say, now, you are a barber stylist, self-described barber stylist. Tell us a little bit about that. Why do you prefer the styling more, the barbering more, or both more, or how do you describe yourself?
I think barber stylist is, for me, the perfect explanation of what I do with my craft. So specifically, I combine the barbering aspect with the fades and the techniques, and I combine it with the styling aspects with sheer work and texturizing and just really learning the long lengths and textures down really well. So I combine the two, and my style is a little bit more unique than the typical barber out there. And I do women hair and color and relaxers and perms, so I kind of have to apply the female draw as well. So that's why I like to use barber stylist instead of just barber.
Now, I don't think we run across too many of the gentleman barbers out there who do both. Usually they tend to kind of gravitate, it seems to me, but, you know, I could be wrong, but that's the way it seems to me. So do you have a preference, or do you have a preference?
Yeah, I definitely prefer...
Or should I say a leaning?
I definitely prefer men hair, fading, for example, but... The challenges that come from women hair and trying to understand and figure those out really enjoy those. You know, it's a different X factor in the field that it's just so helpful to know and understand how to do. And I really enjoy doing women hair just as much as I do fading, but I prefer the men conversation and the men interaction. So
a little bit. Okay. So I kind of like this because as you were talking, I was thinking, I said, well, hold it. Some shops, though, it's rare. It's hard. To me, it seems like it would be hard to find a shop where it kind of speaks to both male, you know, men and women at the same time, you know, because a lot of times the women don't feel so comfortable being around the guys, you know, the cutting hair. Not so much the barbers, but sometimes the clients. So I think that's interesting, you know. So, you know, what do you say to something like that? Or, you know, you ever thought of that?
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely think that it's a professionalism standpoint at that point. Really, when any client comes into the shop, you really have to really read them. As much as you can, just so you don't offend anybody or say anything out of line or out of context. But I know my coworkers, they're super respectful. They're super professional. So anytime any of my clients come in, they all feel welcome and comfortable. So that's a blessing.
Well, I think it has a lot to do with what you reflect in your personality. And I can hear that and see that. So I think that's a big part of it. Listen, folks out there, if you have just tuned in, you are listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. Now, I have a new barber on the line with me today. He's out in the Indianapolis area. His name is Darren Scott. Darren, I want to kind of say, you know, I love your story because I was reading or doing some research, and I see that you really, you are a very educated man. You know, you started out in a different area, so to speak, at least your field of study. So I want to talk a little bit about that. Can you tell us a little bit about your education background, and then we'll bridge this over into your barbering career?
Yeah, absolutely. I have a bachelor's degree in criminal justice.
Amazing.
With a minor in, thank you, I appreciate that, and a minor in digital forensics from Ball State University in Muncie, Indiana.
Hold it, digital forensics? What is it?
Yeah.
Okay. You've got to tell us what digital forensics is. what is digital forensics?
Basically, it's just a fancy word.
Oh, CSI. We get it. Is it CSI?
Yeah, that's pretty much the simple term, the CSI type of dealing with just online focus. You know, I took a lot of HTML classes and JavaScript classes for coding and things like that.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah.
And it's funny because that you say that, because one of the big things that I wanted to talk about is, well, first, let's kind of go back a little bit. You're, because you have this amazing degree in, you know, in criminal justice and all of that, and you have, how did you transition over to making, you know, jumping over to the barbering, you know, career? And has that helped you, having that background, even though I know it's something totally different, has that played any part in your success in getting started as a barber?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Thank you.
So I'll have to – I guess I'll jump from the beginning. When I was 15, I found out I had an older brother who I didn't know about. He had contacted me, found me on Facebook. We had, you know, we had a few conversations here and there. We finally met up and it was just, I never had a brother. So it was something, something I really looked up to and admired and appreciated. And on the side, he was cutting hair. He'd been cutting hair since he was 15, but he'd been cutting hair since for 15 years already. Cause at this time he's 30 and I looked up to him. I wanted to be just like him. So I kind of noticed, I started paying attention to techniques he was doing and just really appreciating the art of cutting hair. So I started, you know, practicing on myself and I got the hang of it fairly quick. And my buddies started, yo, you know, can you give me a haircut or, you know, just the typical thing that most barbers go through.
Right, right.
And then I didn't start taking it seriously until I went to college. So I graduate high school, I go to college and I bought my first pair of Andis Masters, clippers going into college. And I kind of just took off from there. My first semester of college, I sat down and had a conversation with my parents. I told them, I didn't want to be at school. I wanted to go to barber school.
And how did that conversation go?
Not well.
Okay.
No, they
yes.
They supported me in any decision I made, but ultimately it was up to me. And I decided to stay in school. And I'm glad I did. I stayed in school and it just made me, in terms of socially, just blossom into the man I am and made me be able to hold and maintain conversations with really any demographic, really anybody. So that helped me out tremendously. And then I graduated college, moved to Chicago. I worked law enforcement for a little bit. And
because you wanted to be a police officer, I heard. So
I was in the process. And, you know, I'd been hired and I was going through all of that. Yeah. And, when you know what you want to do with your life, you kind of know, like it's hard to deny it. So I was kind of having an internal battle this entire time. And where I was living at in Chicago, there was a Chukchi University of Beauty Culture, like 5 minutes from where I lived. And I drove past it every day.
Wow.
It was kind of like taunting me, like,
yeah.
Every time I was driving by, I was like, man, I wish I could go there.
Wow.
And I finally made the decision to quit the law enforcement path and enroll in barber school.
Because it's almost the antithesis of, you know, being an officer, so to speak. The hair and beauty industry, I think one would think, wow, that's amazing. Just an amazing story. Now, I still also want to go back to find out, so what did your brother think about you doing hair, you know, cutting hair and kind of following in his path?
I've had many conversations with him about this. I fully credit my brother for giving me the spark with hair. So he gave me the spark, and I've kind of just, I never stopped with it. I kept running with it. I kept developing my craft and continuing to educate myself in my field. And he's one of my biggest supporters. I cut his hair to this day. And he's proud of me. He's super proud of me. So it's awesome.
Well, it's also nice that you have a brother that you had, you know, discovered later. I think that's just the whole story is amazing. So, you know, we're talking with Mr. Darren Scott. He's a barber out in Indianapolis, Indiana, just so that we get that on out there. And I have to say that we're really proud of all that you're doing. You're really getting off the ground. Sounds like you started kind of a lot further along than a lot of folks who've been doing barbering for a much longer time. You have a good head on you, you know, on your shoulders, as they say. So this is really cool. We're happy to talk with you. So now, well, it's my pleasure. So we always have to ask everybody. We know that the first thing you want to have, marketing, you put yourself out there and probably ultimately have a shop or something. Have those ideas crossed your mind?
Yeah. So I've always, As a kid, I always either wanted to be a cop or I wanted to be a teacher. So I actually want to go back to school within the next probably year or two and get my instructor's license so I can teach barbering. And that's the main goal I want to accomplish at the moment, but eventually – I would absolutely love to own my own establishment and just bring my vibe and my look, my outlook on just the beauty industry into an environment. And I'm super excited for all the opportunities that I'm going to have within the next few years.
Absolutely.
I'm definitely going to make those opportunities happen one way or another.
And I have to say, in kind of doing my own deep dive, as we do here on the Hair Radio Morning Show, and I saw that you had somewhere, I came across that you had worked with kind of like at-risk youth, and it seemed like you lit up when you talked about it. So can you tell the listeners out there what that experience was like and how you feel about that?
Yeah, so after I graduated college, I worked at a youth juvenile facility with more of a rehabilitative focus, and I worked there for about 3 months before I moved to Chicago, and it was unlike anything I've ever experienced. Just to listen to the kids, they ranged from like 7 or 8 to about 17. They all had different experiences. They were all at this facility for a different reason and a different purpose. Some were sex offenders. Some were kids that were going through the system because their family wasn't in the right, you know, mental or physical situation. But each conversation I had with these kids, it resonated with me in a personal level, and it really touched my soul when I was having these conversations with these kids, what they had been through, what they had experienced in life, and it was so crushing to hear that the things that they were going through at such a young age. And I actually continue to talk to a handful of them to this day. You know, they come to me with for advice, and when I left, they were all fairly upset because they felt like at least the ones that I had talked to said that they felt I was one of the people they could really vent to and that would actually care and actually listen to them. And it wasn't that I was like trying to do that. It's just in my nature to empathize with people and understand where they're coming from and really just genuinely care, because I don't think enough humans actually care about other people. So yeah, that alone right there was just life-changing, a life-changing experience and atmosphere for me. So thank you to the Youth Opportunity Center in Muncie, Indiana, and I wish all those kids well. I hope they're doing well, and I hope that there's many others that are working there that have the same impact that the kids told me I had on them.
Well, it sounds like this really is your calling, and all of that lends itself to your barbering, and silent career very clearly. So this is just awesome. And talk about barbering. Let's talk a little bit of technical skills, if you will. You seem to be known for fading. And, or you seem to like fading really, really, really a lot. Because I think I've seen you talk about fading a bit. So can you share with us, how that plays a part? Or is that a big thing for you? Or, you know, maybe the utensils that you use? Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So fading to me and perfecting a really smooth blend for a client is and can be one of the most frustrating things in our field. But I really feel like I have the grasp on it. I really take the canvas and I look at it like a piece of art. You know, I really want my edges, so my lineups to be sharp and crisp, and I really want my blends to just be smooth to where it's from across the room it looks clean. So with fading, I use three or four different clippers, ranging from Babyliss Pro to Andis to Wall. But I also combine a lot of styling, you know, like sheer over comb and a little bit of clipper over comb. There's a lot of things that play into just getting the hair and the canvas just right. And really it's all about making your client satisfied as well. So to me, a big part of the industry has nothing to do with actual talent and actual application. It's all about building rapport with your client and building that relationship and just making sure they're happy with their style and what works best for them on a day-to-day basis. And did I educate my clients well enough to replicate my styling at home? So I'll recommend certain products that would be good, or if they, you know, in the wintertime, I'll recommend certain shampoos or just anything along the lines of just building a relationship, a deeper relationship than a client to barber relationship. An actual friendship is important to me, and almost all of my clients and I have a very good friendship and relationship that goes deeper than, you know, just, hey, here's a haircut and here's your money. You know, it's exactly a lot deeper than that to me.
Well, it sounds like, you know, what you're saying is you have to care, and I think that's what we're getting from Darren Scott
absolutely
today.
Absolutely. Yep.
Wow. So what's next for you, Darren? What's next for Darren Scott?
honestly, I try not to, you know, get a big head. I know I'm talented, but I really just see the sky as the limit for me at this point. You know, Indiana, my name's getting out there. I've been
well, you're on the Hair Radio Morning Show today, so you're literally on all over the world. We have listeners in Australia and Africa, as well as Italy, as well as, I mean, we have folks who tune into our show just about in every corner of the world, literally. And, of course, from New York to L.A. And we're in Brooklyn, New York, and we're on, you know, so just imagine the folks that you're reaching this morning who are now going to know who you are, and you are in great company with all these other folks that have been on our broadcast. We're happy to have you. Fit right in.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity, and I just want to take a moment to say, like, if anybody ever has any questions or needs advice with just barbering or gaining more clientele or just really anything in the field, or really in life, I'm always available to have conversations. I'm always open. I'm always here to listen to anybody. And I love this field. I absolutely adore this field. I couldn't imagine being in any other career choice. And I'm truly blessed that I'm so passionate. I'm so grateful for that. Because I wouldn't be in this position had I not loved this so much.
Absolutely. Well, I love that your background to me still enables you. It helps you so much to reach. You know, you're talking to a lot of younger folks. You're talking to a lot of urban young people.
Well, it's like, I get to wake up early and have a cup of coffee and breakfast with my favorite two folks in the whole wide world every day. That's Nicole Marie and Michael Hopkins, and I'm Kerry Hines right here on the All New Hair Radio Morning Show. And you get to do the same thing. We start from 6 a.m. Eastern, 5 Central Time. Take the show all the way to 9 o'clock in the morning here in New York Live. Always make it a great day.
I honestly feel like that's why most people don't have solid friendships, because mm-hmm. it's the proximity that has power over them
yeah.
instead of them having power over their proximity.
Mm-hmm.
What I mean by that is, if you go to work every day and you see the same people, well, I see you so often that now you've become my best friend. But you never really should have been my best friend. We're not actually in alignment. I just see you
enough
I'm comfortable enough that I start telling you things I shouldn't tell you. And so then we get mad when Sally goes and tells all our business.
Yeah.
Or we get mad when Sally goes and does whatever she does, but Sally's really just being Sally.
Yeah.
So
you didn't know Sally.
Mad.
You didn't know Sally to begin with.
Right. I didn't get mad at Sally for being who she is. I just get mad at myself for putting Sally in best friend slot when she's not qualified.
That's good.
We need to stop qualifying people that are literally not putting in the work. They're just showing up.
Surround yourself with people whose eyes light up when they see you coming. Two, slowly is the fastest way to get to where you want to be. And three, the top of one mountain is the bottom of the next, so keep climbing.
Don't allow anybody to make you feel that you are nobody. Always feel that you count. Always feel that you have worth, and always feel that your life has ultimate significance.
I am an endangered species, but I sing no victim song. A woman, I am an artist, and I know where my voice
Brianna, it's so great to have you back with us right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. How are you?
I'm doing good. Yes. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, let me just tell everybody out there, you made such a splash. You impressed everybody here. So all the fans and just nothing but very good vibes and very nice complimentary words about your guest appearance, your recent guest appearance on the show. So today, though, here's the thing, Brianna. I want to talk a little bit. First, let me just remind everybody. Now, you guys who are just kind of joining us, Brianna Spruill is, you are a self-described, you are a hair artist mm-hmm. and a wig master. Now, we kind of can figure out what the hair artist is about a little bit. But tell everybody, what is exactly a wig master?
A wig master is basically someone who builds wigs from scratch and does measurements on the client's head and actually builds it from top to bottom and is able to elaborate different hairstyles and textures and make it look very realistic, especially for film and TV shows.
Now, is that hard to do? Because it sounds like it's hard to do.
Yeah, it is hard to do. I'm not going to be around the bush with it, but
right.
it takes a lot of practice. I'm even still learning still. Like, I just want to call myself a wig master ahead of time so I know I am in the future.
I love that. So it's like aspiring
to be this, you know, this all-knowing wig master out there. Reminds me, I used to deal with a fella here in Brooklyn area, Clem Lou Yacht, used to be on. You guys may know, remember him out there. And he was one of the wig masters from the olden days. Well, listen, we've got a whole new blood out there, and you're part of that, Brianna, and I'm very proud to say, and ushering in a whole new thing. And that's really what I wanted to talk a little bit about, at least at the beginning of this piece today, because, you know, wigs are different. They've what do we say, evolved, I guess is the word. It's not my grandma's wigs. I remember those wigs sitting up in the top of the closet like a hat.
That's right. The so, ancient wigs.
Yeah. Those things are gone. So now we have wigs. They've got custom wigs. They've got, you know, and they're all kinds of prices and all kinds of wigs have different meanings. Some even got names. And so, we've got to start there. What's your take on how wigs have evolved, even since you've been in the game? What would you like to say to that today, Brianna?
I really feel that we have more variety, especially like hands-on wigs as far as going to the store if you need to get one really quickly. But I feel like wigs are still kind of the same. We just don't know per se, how to get them in a timely manner if we want something specific. Or clients don't want to be patient on getting something that takes more time than versus going to the store and actually just picking one up. And I feel like everyone should study how to take care of a wig so it can last longer, because people just buy wigs and just treat them like whatever after they purchase them, when they actually can have them last longer than they expected to.
And that's something that I think you're really educating people about today on this broadcast. They can be styled and taken care of. And even the pricing on some of the lower price wigs that are out there, they can last too if with proper care or better care. Mm-hmm. So all of that, you're absolutely right. Now, I want to talk about one of the big things out there, protective styling and all of that, and protective styles, rather. And so the wigs kind of help with that a little bit. Can you explain what I'm talking about here with the protective styles and how the wigs play a part in that? Sure.
Sure. To be honest, people with natural hair and kinky, coily hair get frustrated mostly because they don't know how to tame it or style it, or it takes quite amount of time to even get a specific hair look that a client would like with natural hair. So using wigs is a good substitution. And just if a client is just being lazy, then they'll just go get a wig, basically. Or if they don't want to have nothing to do with their hair, they'll go get a wig and put it on, and they could change it up a lot of times, because wigs are, synthetic mixed blend wigs are getting quite more affordable now. So those are the wigs that last a little bit longer.
Yes, exactly. And I love that in a way, because what I do say about the folks who love wigs as well out there, and they're you guys, you know who you are, you the wig lovers, and we love that about you, and that's all great. Mm-hmm. What I love about the contribution that I see is that it affords them some additional options. You know, it's all about options.
Mm-hmm.
And without, you know, sometimes, you know, even when it comes to, having a different natural hairstyle, I think the wigs allow you to try different looks without sometimes potentially causing damage to your own hair. Does that make sense? Like,
absolutely.
You know what I mean? And I think that you guys, because oftentimes, you know, the stylist, you will tell the client, you can't have that. That look doesn't work with your texture. And
right.
they
they go out the door and go to someone else who will do it. You know, get the mess up. And, you know, it happens. My thing is, if, you know, promote the wigs, you know, try to use that as an alternative. If you're trying to seek a style and you just can't handle that, your hair texture can't handle that style. And that's important. Right. Everybody's hair is not interchangeable. And I think that that's always the message that we got to get across from you guys out there doing such a great job. So I want to talk about the hair art part, too.
Okay, Carrie.
You're a hair art. I'm loving all of this. So I'm on your website. Yes. So I've got to ask you, and I know we talked about Luminous Mood before, but I want you to tell everybody a little bit more. I love the artistic look of your site. Give everybody your website and talk to us about energy and vibrant textures.
Okay. So Luminous Mood is about having the vibrant soul that you have deep down in your spirit that you don't bring out mostly every day, because even when you're feeling down and low, there's always still something like tingling on the side of your brain that you want to be happy. So for you to have that brightness visual in your hair, not even if it's a lot, like if it's just a little bit of streak, one braid, two braids, a cornrow, an extension, just a hair clip piece. And that just brings out, like, the best of you. Like, color is everything. I understand people don't like color or, you know, color, even with, like, gothic people or, you know, people that play the other side, they still have some type of other symbol of color to make them feel good. Like, if they're all black, they'll have red. If they're all black, they'll have another color. Yeah, something. So, like, it goes for both sides. And I really just, I see color all the time. That's just who I am as a human being. Vibration of high energy is just everything. So that brings out the good side of you, which is color.
Wow. I'm loving it. And I think this is something that we, I think color definitely speaks to your soul. And I like that you're so... how do you have it here to release the energy of your soul of color? It's no better than that. Remind everybody how they can get to you on the internet and all of that, and your site and all of that.
Oh, so I have Instagram, Facebook. I have a YouTube channel as well of where, like, I sit and you guys can watch me braid a wig or style a wig or even a client just for satisfaction, just to see me actually do some work. And... all my platforms are the same name. It's Brianna Sproul. My website is BriannaSproul.com. And also I have Twitter. I have Facebook, Instagram. I have a LinkedIn, but I believe LinkedIn is for just like work ethic-wise. Also,
Brianna, we got to remind everybody that your spelling of your site name and all of that, because I've seen some other Briannas and they don't spell it the way you spell Brianna.
No.
But I love your spelling.
Thank
you.
I even Google my name. Yeah, I even Google my name, and it just, I think it's one other woman that has like my name, but it's not even spelled
with your
spelling.
Yeah. Well, you know what? So let's put it out there for everybody. Give everybody your whole spelling and all of that, because we want folks to be able to find you. And this is how they do it. So, give us the beginning.
Okay. My first and last name is Brianna Sproul. BRIEANASPRUILL.
Wonderful. And your site is BriannaSproul.com, of course, so you guys can get there very easily. Listen, I'm loving all of this. And since your first appearance on this very show, and I've got to say, because, you know, when Brianna and I talk, I have been doing the Hairpreneur series for a while. And we didn't really talk about it on the air, but this is something that has been very much a part of what we do here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. You guys know that we're all about information and education. And so we usually get folks who are beginning their careers in somewhere along the hair spectrum, not necessarily a stylist or even a product company owner or what have you, just because there's a million places. And I love that you are someone who's in the entertainment realm.
Thank you. I love that.
You know, yeah. And, you know, and you're comfortable on set. You know, and working, you know, in tandem with folks who are recording videos and shooting videos and doing movies and all of that and TV shows for that much. And that's a big part of what folks want to get into out there. So this is, you know, and that's one of the main questions we get here on this show. Now, you have some, you've done some work already out there with this.
I have. Yep.
You've done some, yes. So how does that make you feel, and what advice would you even be able to share with others? And we'll get back to hairpreneurs. But what advice would you share with others who are looking to get to that of the industry?
So, Carrie, this topic is very sensitive to me, and I do want to have, like, another day that we talk about it still again to continue. And because I am a newcomer to the TV and film industry, I want to say that you want to start off with getting familiar with people who are directors and producers, and you want to start that way with getting a good relationship. Also with other people who are in the industry as well, as far as whatever, if you like being a journalist, if you like being a camera person, the lighting, the grips, whatever, you just want to have a good relationship with at least one person. And because that side of the industry is so, like, they're not iffy, but they're very strict on who to work with.
Because
like one little bad, I don't know, one little bad like situation or whatever, bad name, reputation,
right.
You're
you
like
have...
out the door. and it reflects on whoever like had you a part, whoever told you that you could work, whoever, you know, talked good about you or put you in the team. And you just really want to practice on etiquette, professionalism, and being uncomfortable with working around people who are not so nice all the time. And I'm not saying that they're not so nice. They're just like, they're always working. Like, they work way more hours than a regular 9-to-5 person. So, you know, they get tired and, you know, they can't really spend time as much with their family. So I get it, you know? So you gotta just have like a good level head if you really want to be in that industry, because it's not easy. It's really not.
Speaking of which, you do it well because you've made the right connections.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those connections that we are so proud of.
Rise and shine with the Hair Radio Morning Show with Carrie Hines.
All right, we're back live. It's Wednesday morning, December 6th of 2023. I'm Carrie Hines out of Brooklyn, New York. And boy, oh boy, we've been doing pretty well. Got a really, really great show going today. Got to say, coming up in just a couple minutes here, I have a very special live conversation with former mayor from New Jersey. You guys know Wayne Smith. He's been with us many, many, many times. And we got a whole lot to talk about today. We really do. And then, of course, Michael Hopkins will be joining our conversation with Wayne Smith today at about 8:30 this morning. So in about 12, 15 minutes, Michael, stand on by. I will be checking in with you in just a moment. And I know you're working on some questions for Wayne Smith. Okay, so listen, I'm going to go ahead and bring Wayne on, kind of get things rolling. Everybody knows about this whole thing with George Santos. They even gave him a nickname in Congress. He was just booted out this past Friday. Was finally able to get it, which seems like a lifetime ago in the news cycle. So we're going to kind of talk a little bit about him and then on to some local, some things to get folks out and keep people ready. Next year is the election. Unless you've been under a rock, you know what's kind of at stake here. So it's my great honor to bring back to the show. He was mayor for 12 years out in incredible Irvington, New Jersey, and we are so excited. He's been our political contributor and motivator, the one and only Wayne Smith. Wayne, good morning to you. Happy Wednesday. We're so used to having you here on Fridays. But I almost said, I think you're always with us on Fridays.
Yeah, I'm delighted to be here in the middle of the week, but and always a pleasure to be with you. Can you hear
yeah,
me?
Yeah, I think this is the first Wednesday you've been on. It's been a long
time. Yeah, okay, all right.
Yes, it's been a long, long time. So listen, Wayne, we want to kind of jump on in and let folks know. First, I want to talk a little bit. Got to bring this fella up and put a thumbtack or put, you know, kind of, well, I don't think the story is over yet. So, yeah, we'll probably have to thumbtack it. But we're talking about the former congressman, George Santos, out of New York, which, you know, this has been going on for almost a year. So about for 10, 11 months, he's been in Congress. And it almost seemed like that persons were starting to almost normalize his being there. And they kind of were, it just, the way it seemed to me, were kind of overlooking things. So this scathing report was released that it didn't just remind us of some of the horrific, things that he allegedly done, but also new things that we didn't even know about. And they're just all egregious, incredibly egregious. I don't know which, you know, I think one of my, and this Michael might want to relate to, is the money that he raised, now this is all alleged or whatever, but the poor veteran, Dog, used this whole thing to raise funds. And that the poor man never got the money, of course. And then using the names of, there's a long laundry list, folks. So, Wayne, what do you say? Is this kind of stuff new? I mean, you've been around the political spectrum. Is this kind of behavior new?
Well, I think that... you've always had, you know, every now and then there's a con man that appears in probably every sphere in American life. And George Santos showed what the ultimate con man could do in public life. Most con men don't want to be known and have publicity. They may have several identities and all of that. But George Santos thought he could fool the world by swindling the voters into a seat in Congress, and actually thought he could get away with serving. And so though it was an albatross, I think we never seen anything that extreme, but I do want to talk about extremities in our society that the voters can take care of. But, you know, this was an extreme particular case with George Santos. And I mean, he spent his whole life conning. And pulled off the ultimate con by being elected to Congress. Now, we're at a time in American history where people are, you know, and some of this is two causes. One is the political parties themselves have not vetted candidates well, and then the voters themselves. And luckily, we have still have a free press, because we would have known none of this had not a local newspaper in that congressional district did an expose on George Santos, and the New York Times, which had much broader coverage, picked up the story. So, you know, it's important that we support local press and even these small media outlets, because sometimes they will break a story that the major media will not. And sometimes they lead the way because they're focused in on a thing. But Santos, you know, the good news is, though it took a year or more to correct this, it did get corrected. And a combination of things, some of it was politics to make sure, you know, the Democrats wanted to make sure this Republican got out, and they were right to do it, embarrassed the Republicans to take a position on Santos. So when that ethics committee report came out, it was tremendous. But this guy, from his early life, had been a con artist. He had charges in Brazil that go back to when he was a young person even. And so him, you know, just taking advantage of the veteran with the dog was just, I mean, just this guy has no morals, no scruples. There's nothing.
No low.
That,
I mean, there's no low,
yeah,
you know, just
I mean, this,
real.
Yeah, this is a new low. And I guess what they keep doing. Now, the bad news for him is getting kicked out of Congress is just the beginning, because now he's facing criminal charges. And but, you know, it's interesting, though, because the United States Senator from Pennsylvania, John Fetterman, actually, they say hired him to do a joke commercial about Senator Menendez. Senator Menendez, as we all know, in New Jersey, United
right.
States Senator, is under indictment. And so I guess to embarrass the Senate, Senator Menendez, Fetterman asked George Santos to do a commercial telling him to stay the course. I think we're getting into so this is my point.
Is that,
we
get how did that get out? How did that story get out?
I saw it on Instagram. So you know, sometimes our politics is really generating kind of a new low in a whole host of areas. So let me talk about that a little bit. So the most sacred vote in American politics that I know of is seniors. And if anybody's going to show up at the polls, it's mostly seniors. So, you know, we hope that seniors continue to vote. And they have a number of reasons to vote. One, they spent their life building families, communities, and the country. And, you know, some of the things that they hold near and dear, whether it's pension protection, because that's how they're going to, you know, as we age, that's how we live out our lives. Social Security protection. There's some people out there, particularly among Republicans, who want to do what they call Social Security reform, which, you know, some people think is going to put elders at risk. So they're that's a sacred cow among our senior population, and so that's important. So you know, but now, you know, Joe Biden, because he's a senior. We, you know, though we respect the senior vote, you got a senior president, and people are saying all kinds of things, like he kind of doesn't have the capacity to serve. Do we value our seniors or don't we value our seniors? And certainly President Biden has a host of experience, and there's no political candidate that's perfect. Does he have his weaknesses? Absolutely does. But he does have some core strengths, and he, in my estimation, is moving the country forward. Look, you got a presidential candidate on the other side in Donald Trump, who's been accused of a tremendous number of things in my lifetime.
I was about to say, it's a whole lot easier to just list the things he has not been accused of. You'll save a whole lot of time.
Because
in my lifetime, all
the things
he has not been accused of. So a lot shorter list on that side.
So in my lifetime, all of those things, that would have been a disqualifier. So not only a presidential candidate, a candidate for city council, mayor, or governor.
That's right.
A national office like president of the United States. So somehow in the American public square, you know, we've reached a new low in my estimation. Anything goes.
Wayne, I got to ask you this. And I just remember Gary Hart being on a rowboat with the lady, I forget her name back
her first
then.
Name, her first name was Donna. Well, Donna Rice or something like that. Donna something.
Oh boy, you are good. You are good, Wayne Smith. Donna Rice. And that all I believe was a picture that was out there of them on this boat. That was it. It was a picture.
Yeah, you listen. And it defrocked his whole presidential candidate. At that time, Starr was rising. He could have ended up winning the Democratic primary for president. May have been president of the United States. But you're right. I mean, all of those kinds, those were, you know, scandals were disqualifiers for a lot of candidates. And in my lifetime, most candidates would even face a scandal. They would either not run or they would, you know, resign. Or whatever, but these people now, I mean, I don't think, you know, there's no perfect person. So the American public sometimes can be very forgiving. And oftentimes, you know, I'm not trying to judge anybody, but oftentimes, you know, it's a hard balance to figure out. But I mean, some of this stuff that we're seeing today to me is a new level and a new extreme in terms of public conduct, what we allow. People accused of criminality. And I know everybody's innocent until proven guilty, but there's just some standards we seem to be really pushing up to the line.
Well, I'm glad that's how you feel. I feel like that line has been way already. We've gone overboard.
Yeah, I mean,
here's
it's unbelievable.
That's a lot
and
of
so
willful ignorance on a lot of these folks' part out there. Where we know that folks have done wrong, and we are looking to not even pay attention to the character of this person, mm-hmm. when mm-hmm. it is the very attribute that is most important. So then I look and see, well, what on earth are we, why are we here rewarding bad actors? We know they're bad.
So,
they're as rotten as the fish. It's not even, you know, something that's debatable. And when they try to qualify themselves and then they say, oh, well, you know, they're literally mad at you for calling them out on their bad behavior.
And
oh my, where did we arrive to? But again, all of this to me, like I told folks on the show in the middle hour today, a lot of this, Wayne, to me just reminds me that lack of accountability is what has totally corroded our society. It has permeated our society. If you're not holding folks accountable, you're not calling things out the way that they should be. That's how you arrive at this kind of a place.
Yeah, I think so.
That's
I think
my
lack, yeah. Lack of participation at every level is a corrosive stain on society. So only a handful of people can decide who gets the chance to have power and so forth. So the more participation, the more spotlight, the more we pay attention. And I know, listen, life is difficult. We all have to earn enough money to sustain ourselves, and that's a challenge in itself. But everything that we do, there's some regulatory body that is affected by the electoral process. I mean, you can't even have a street sign unless somebody votes for it. And the person that who decides that, you have an opportunity to put in place. And so just take a minute to talk about just some short issues that are, you know, impacting, is going to impact a broader society as we look at the presidential election coming up next year. So you know, there for many, many years, there were a ton of people who did not have health care for various reasons. And it goes back to, I remember Ted Kennedy tried to launch a program where more and more people, and this was when he was in the U.S. Senate, and they did a pilot program in Newark, New Jersey, where, you know, everybody eligible could sign up for this health care if you didn't have health care. It took a long time. There was this big struggle. And then, of course, there was a whole movement around Medicare for all, that everybody should be on Medicare. You know, most of our seniors qualify for Medicare. The President Obama comes up and says, you know, one of the criminal issues that cuts across the board, cuts many demographics, was the state of health care. Health care is too expensive. It's still some major challenges. Drug costs are high, all those kind of things. So he finally gets the affordable health care project done. Yeah. In fact, I remember Joe Biden saying, hell, he cussed, but this was a big deal. And so now they call it the Affordable Care Act is Obamacare. It's interesting. They've done some polls that says if you ask people, do you support Obamacare in some different parts of the country, they say no. But then if you ask them, do they support the Affordable Care Act, they say yes. But it's the same thing.
Right, so, exactly.
Just, so now Donald Trump is talking about in his presidential election, all of those, and then you see all the commercials running on television about healthcare.gov. And a friend of mine asked me the other day, well, what is, and I said, remember the fight about Obamacare and everybody, the number of people that didn't have health care that now have health care, who couldn't afford to pay for their own plan but didn't qualify necessarily for Medicaid or the Medicare, they now have, they can now get a plan. So Donald Trump is now injected into the presidential campaign that he wants to end that. The Republicans have given up that fight. They lost every bit of
it. Every single time
they tried to get eliminated in Congress. So those are the kinds of things that, you know, voting takes care of. And the process works for people if we participate. Here's another example. Even, you know, one of the most avid activists in terms of what they love to do is sports fans. And if you like football, if you like basketball, whatever, and I'm not saying this is the right thing to do, but even voting determines where stadiums are going to go. People only when these guys buy, there's a big debate going on whether or not the JFK Stadium in D.C. should be rebuilt for a football team. But all of these issues are going to be decided by people who get elected to office and the voters. And sometimes these things
they get it on the ballot
and put it on the ballot.
Yeah.
And so, but if you don't participate, and I see people who keep up with sports more active than they do the things that affect their daily lives, sometimes their children's lives. Not that we don't need some diversions for entertainment and stuff like that. I'm just saying that even in that arena, voting affects that. You know, the basic necessities of life, like housing. I was just reading about some incidents in Brooklyn. Even public housing residents are now being able to vote on what kind of public housing they're going to get. There's a federal law called Section 8, which allows you to take your voucher and go into the private marketplace and rent a house, but most times it's not enough of a subsidy. Or Section 9. Section 9 means you have an apartment that's built had been built by the federal government, but now what the struggle is for that is the federal government has walked away from its responsibility to make any investments in infrastructure for those houses to maintain. So a lot of public housing units that we have around the country are falling down. So to Mayor Adams' credit, he developed a trust fund to try to rehabilitate some of those houses. But the tenants, and I don't think you even have to be a registered voter in New York. You just have to be a resident of public housing. They've created the rules so that you can, if you live in public housing, because this affects you, you have the ability to vote on what kind of housing you have. This is right in listening. The first vote will be, I think, at Sheepshed Bay, and I just call that to your attention.
Oh, Gary, that's not all that far from me.
I'm sure it's going to, you know, these kinds of things are going to affect communities across the country. But if people don't pay attention, they'll get shafted. And when it's all said and done, you potentially had a say so in the outcome of what kind of housing you're going to get. And this is housing basically for people who not the top earners in society, who are struggling to have housing and so forth and trying to maintain their families. So at every level of life, there's some kind of public interaction that we have a voice in. And the problem is that we don't exercise that voice enough. And voting is one thing. The second part of voting is also being an intelligent voter. Because had we paid attention to who this guy was, George Santos, he would not have the ability to fool the public. You know, and then
I'm glad you brought that up, because here's the thing about that. And I looked at, you know, I'm here in New York. I see the local commercials that when he was first brought or elected into Congress. And this is the thing. We're so quick to get behind someone's negative vitriol. Again, overstepping their character. As long as they can tap into something inside of us that speaks to the lowest common decency. And that's where this guy was. And just like the former, president, Donald Trump, we've got to do better, folks. We got to be better. And again, it reminds me of that old saying, Wayne, where folks just, it seems like they don't want you to, they don't want to treat somebody else fairly. It's not, it's almost like they feel like they've lost if they just treat you fairly. They want to be better than you are, control who you are. Then they're happy. And we are the ones suffering, so the marginalized people.
Right.
Wayne, I forgot. I gotta get our buddy, someone who's a huge fan of yours, into the conversation this morning. You guys know Michael Hopkins. He is the host of the Vet Talk radio show that airs on Tuesday mornings from 8:30 to 9 right here on our network. He's a good friend and a colleague on this broadcast and one of our co-hosts. He comes to us out of Spotsylvania, Virginia. He's been on, I think he's been on with us a few times, Wayne. Let me get Michael Hopkins. Michael, are you there this morning?
Wow. Just wow. Good morning, Wayne.
Good morning, Wayne.
I am still rocking and reeling just listening to you and Carrie. And I'm still stuck on the dog. I put it to you like, I'm still stuck on this dude and the dog.
I knew Michael was not going to let that fly.
I'm like, really, George? A dog. And you see, unfortunately.
Have you seen a video clip of that? I think they showed the picture. And it's enough to just, like, goodness creep.
How low do you go? You know, how low do you go? And then, you know, Wayne and Carrie, unfortunately, as a veteran and as many veterans, the way we think, I was just sitting here and I'm thinking, why did I go to a foreign land to protect democracy and freedom and all this other crap? And now I'm back here in the United States of America and I see these idiots. And that's why veterans do what they do. That's why a lot of us will self-medicate. We will
just
and we're not condoning
y'all.
Any of that, Mike.
No,
we're not caring.
Yeah, and you're right.
We want veterans to be able to get the help that they need.
Right.
So that's
very important. But, you know, it's the end result because we see as veterans, so many of us have fought in these wars. We have got maimed, hurt, all that. I'm not trying to be negative. I'm just being realistic with both of you. And a lot of times when we go to our vet meetings and we go to vent, these are the kind of issues that come up amongst veterans, people like the Santos and this person and that, and it divides us too. And Wayne, my question is to you, as veterans, what do we do, Wayne? What would you suggest we do as veterans to help get this country back on track?
Well, I think that no one has paid the ultimate sacrifice for the fundamental freedoms that Americans enjoy as a veteran. So, you know, we cannot thank you and others for the service that you have rendered to the country, and you've rendered it whether you agree with your government or not. And
very
so,
much so, Wayne.
I would encourage veterans to do, when I was in public office, one of the things I would always say is ask veterans to stay engaged. It's almost like, you know, they say politics is the art of war without the bullets. And so it's a mental game. We're fighting for not only the mind, heart, and soul of the country, but particularly for veterans issues. And Michael, we talked about this the last conversation we had, and you brought
very
it up.
Very much so, Wayne.
And I share this because you were right on point. So in this whole budget debate on the federal level, a number of veterans will not be able to get the services because they haven't struck a budget yet. And, you know, if they were to go to a government shutdown and they're not hiring, so a number of people who service the veterans are not being able to perform their tasks. And so I would encourage veterans to not let their congressional representatives off the hook. Even mention it to their mayors and their governors and their state legislators. There's a lot of work. But one of the things, there are a ton of veterans organizations out there. And the veterans who are involved more should get even more involved at every level of government because you have a credibility that most Americans don't have. I couldn't have said it more eloquently than you when you talked about the sacrifices that veterans have made. And, you know, we have to make sure that whatever services they've earned, that they get. And there's a lot of concerns about, you know, the healthcare system for veterans, whether they're VA hospitals or others, whether they're up to speed, and we have to make sure that they are. But then just the basic, you know, substances that the Veterans Administration is supposed to provide, whether it's disability, and I was talking to someone, and if I can find their information, I was in a meeting in Washington a couple of months ago, and I mentioned you to them.
Oh, great. Wow.
Yeah.
The gentleman
was mentioning that he was trying to get his full disability, veterans disability. If I can find his information, I'm going to send it to you. I think I sent him yours. I don't know if he reached out. But he's in Maryland, and I just happened to meet him in D.C., and we were chatting. So he was saying how difficult it was to get his full benefits. And I've talked to others as well. So, you know, what you're doing, the service that you provide is a much-needed one. But vets have a pivotal role. Nobody has the credibility, even with elected officials, than the vet. And so the more engaged we are, not only in voting, but, you know, the next step, voting is the first step in the process. People should vote in every election. And that forces you to pay attention to going on at the school board. You know, you see all these culture wars at the school board over books right now and all different things. And at whatever point of view you have, you got to get it expressed by paying attention. So people say, I don't have kids. Yeah, but the future of the country depends on the kind of kids, how kids get educated. So we should have a voice no matter how our age, whether we have kids or not, in the school board, in the school district, the city council, whether it is the area that you live in or the citywide. They all affect your situation. And so let's just stop for a minute to talk about Carrie. You know, Carrie got encouraged and got involved with the community boards. Now, New York City is organized a lot differently. It's a huge city. But that community board has so much power in terms of land use, different programs that impact the city.
Very much so. Very much so when you hit it on the head. But I do want to say I did get encouraged, but that's thank you to the man I'm chatting with right now, Mr. Wade Smith. this is something that would not be here, would have never been on my radar to even pursue. So Wayne Smith is a very special gentleman to all of us here at the Hair Radio Morning Show and everything that we do, especially in this political sphere. And I love it. I get an opportunity to learn all about land use and all kinds of things. In fact, I think I have a workshop meeting tonight I got to look at. So lots of stuff going on. Hey, wanted to just take a moment to step away from all the wonderful talk that we're having this morning on the political process and so many other things like that. We have Wayne Smith, former mayor from Irvington, New Jersey, on with us this morning, mayor for 12 years. And Irvington, right outside of New York City. I used to live there. And so many folks. Back in the day, Wayne, I don't remember. This was, I'm not going to give my age away. A long time ago. I used to live on Ellis Avenue back off of 19th, I think it was, many years ago.
I know the area. So, I know the area very well.
That was my old stomping grounds. Actually, it was the first place I lived and moved to. When I left Philadelphia, Jersey, Philly, then come back to New Jersey, it was the first place I came to as an adult on my own. So I was so happy. So, So listen, I wanted to take a moment, Wayne, and I got to talk with you and Michael. Hey, I've got some information into our newsroom, if you will, on the broadcast. I just saw that that veteran producer, television producer, Mr. Norman Lear, has died. 101 years of age. So wanted to make sure our fans and you guys were aware. Norman Lear, who was the prolific producer of so many television, groundbreaking television programs. Of which I am a fan to this day. I watch his shows every day. And we had the opportunity, I guess is the best way to say it, to interview one of his partners right here on our show. Of course, we're talking about Mr. Eric Monte, who was right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. He created these incredible characters like, the Jefferson characters and all these folks. On All in the Family, and Eric Monte did our show to talk about it and also about the journey he had working with Norman Lear. And so we just want to take a moment to get across that. Any words you want to say, Wayne, about Eric and Norman Lear and all these folks?
Obviously to the family of Norman Lear, we extend our prayers. You know, in a lifetime, none of us are perfect. Eric and Norman had some challenges around whether or not he got treated fairly in developing those characters. But, you know, it's a black man's struggle trying to promote what he was doing. He was a groundbreaker in terms of developing the shows. But Norman did have the good sense and fortitude to air shows like Good Times and The Jeffersons. Those were
and what's happening. I don't think he did what's happening, but his partner did.
Those were monumental shows, particularly in the black community, because at that time we didn't have many media voices, and so you know there were especially with Good Times. What was interesting about Good Times is that it was a very struggling family, decent family, what I call salt of the earth family, but they had a father in the household, because a lot of the shows at that time actually removed the father from the household. And you had Julia, who was a nurse, and she was a single
mom.
Diane Carroll. But what was groundbreaking for me about Good Times was that John Amos was a father figure in the household, working class guy. They lived in public housing. So, in fact, I watch Good Times every now and then now. And then the Jeffersons showed another side. It was the precursor to the Cosby Show in my mind, because you showed an upscale black family who had done well through business, entrepreneurship, but that was unheard of. And then, of course, the Cosby Show expanded that. In terms of success, where you had a doctor and a lawyer family. And so these shaped the minds of what our people could become and how we live. And so Norman had, you know, his due in making sure that those black media figures got an opportunity to show their work.
Well, yeah, Norman Lear worked, and I remember because Eric, like I said, Eric Monte, you'll see Eric Monte's name on every single episode of Good Times when it comes on. And Eric, when it comes on, and you'll see it there, and it's so amazing. Because when Eric was on the show, he talked about the struggles that he, along with the fellow who played the original Lionel Jefferson. His name is Mike Evans. So Mike has died and went on, of course. Eric is still alive, Eric Monte, and our last conversation, and people know Eric from not just helping Norman to create those iconic black characters, but also from movies like Cooley High. So that's something that was his movie, and also the TV show What's Happening and What's Happening Now. So good stuff, you know, but he gave us the whole skinny on Norman Lear and his, you know, so he was, like you kind of alluded to earlier, there was a little bit of some things going on. We're going to talk about that. We'll do a special broadcast on this tomorrow, because this was a huge part of my growing up. And even now I still watch the Good Times almost every day. I watch Good Times and all these other shows. I like to reflect on it. It teaches me a lot, and I learn a lot about how things were. So I love it. And so on tomorrow's broadcast, hopefully we'll be able to, I'll get the brush off my old interview with Eric Monte and kind of get it back on. And we'll talk about Norman Lear's legacy, which is a huge one.
You mentioned the gentleman, Michael Evans. Because that was the name of the family in Good Times, the Evans, and the young man.
Remember the little kid on there, Mike Evans, the little kid.
Yeah,
that's
Mike
who
Evans.
He was. Right, he was named. The story that Eric told us is that Norman wanted to say thank you, and so he named the family after Mike Evans, who he and Mike and Eric were great friends, and that's why he named them after them. Now, Eric, Michael, speaking of Mike Evans, who was, again, the original Lionel, went on to do some big things. And remember that they created the Jeffersons. They went on to the Jeffersons, you know, which was the spinoff from All in the Family. And we'll talk about the whole thing. We're going to unravel it tomorrow. Here's the big question for you guys out there. How are the Jeffersons connected to the family on Good Times? That's my question to you. Who knows the answer to that? How are they actually connected? There is a connection between the two. So we'll take a look at that tomorrow as we, again, explore and look at Norman Lear's legacy. Again, prolific CBS producer, dead at the age of 101. So we'll have more on that tomorrow.
Carrie, I saw recently the play Raj on What's Happening.
Yes.
I recently saw a clip with him doing an interview where he had an opportunity to spend some time with Muhammad Ali. And he was saying how charitable Muhammad Ali was as a person. And he said he helped him personally, and he saw him just being around him, just a charitable person. He didn't care if you were black, white, didn't matter to him. If you needed some help and he could help, he did it. It was just kind of an amazing interview about Muhammad Ali that I saw. Well, I don't know Roger's real name. What is his real name? The guy
Roger,
who played Roger.
Ernest. Yeah, it was Ernest. Oh, I got to look at the Thomas. Ernest Thomas.
Yeah, the first name was Ernest. You're right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's Ernest Thomas.
But yeah,
now, tomorrow, Wayne, I just wanted to take a quick moment and say thank you so much for being a great guest. As always,
there's
never enough time to talk to Wayne Smith.
Oh, yeah.
And, Wayne, we'll, you have to come back and tell us more about what you're doing these days. We always love to check in with you on that. Again, our special guest, Mr. Wayne Smith. Awesome job, as always, Wayne.
Thank you so much, Wayne.
All right. And, Michael, good job on the show today. We'll be back tomorrow from 6 in the morning.